Ryan, great to talk to you and great to see that you're coming back to Australian basketball. How are you?
No, great. I'm really excited to, you know, head back to New South Wales. I really enjoyed my time in Sydney down on the coastline, and I'm excited about the opportunity in Wollongong.
So how did it come about, Brian? How did you end up back in the NBL with the Hawks?
Well, you know, it's over the last probably 5 or 6 years being in China, a real energy coming through Asia about what's going on in Australia. And I've been following it closely and just what Larry Kesselman's done with the league since I left the league back 11 years ago with the Dragons, where the league was kind of in a basket case. And he's just done an amazing job over the last 11 years. In the last 5 years, it's with some of the programs he's put in, it's really take momentum. And aspect two was, you know, my last year at the Kings, we went through that issue with firepower taking over the team. And from that point, you know, I knew midway through that happening that the team was done. And I formed a real close relationship with Dory. And, you know, we were real tight through that. He really helped me manage the team. He helped, keep my spirits up. And we ended up having that 27-3 season and losing to Melbourne in, you know, game five at Sydney. And as we walked into the parking lot, you know, late afternoon, early evening, looking at the Harbour Bridge, he put his arm around me and said, "Brian, someday I'm going to get a team and you're going to be my coach." And through all this epidemic and, you know, being back in Australia since January, we've been talking and communicating. And, you know, then I met the other owners, Michael Proctor and Brian Colangelo, and was convinced that the ownership was going to be strong. And that was it.
Brian, you've seen so many different leagues, be it a player, a coach, on the international scene. In your opinion, where does the NBL sit right now?
Well, I think you've got the NBA, and then you've got the EuroLeague. You know, that competition in Europe with, you know, CSKA and Bologna. Those two leagues are obviously ahead of Australia. After that, the NBL can go with anybody. And watching the finals this year, you know, there's a lot of strong leagues around the world. Spain, Germany, we're recruiting out of all those in China, and I'm very familiar, and I watch the NBL, and it's right there, which is amazing, amazes everybody, the competition and the level of competition. And really what makes it that is not the imports, it's the Australian content and what's being developed here. We've got over 400 kids playing in America, got names you don't even know that aren't even household names here that are dominating in Europe. And again, it's just amazing what a country of 25 million people, where you got really and sadly kind of a little bit of a second tier sport with Australian rules football and rugby and cricket, you know, to be producing what they're producing.
Can I go back to your career and that transition from player to coach? Was that always something that you wanted to do?
Sat in the back seat of my dad's car from the time I was 5 years old and went to the games with my dad and sat with my hands folded, squeezed, wanting my dad to win, and played for my dad and started playing when I was 8 years old, 6 years old, and knew as my career was winding down in Australia, you know, I wanted to play as long as I could and enjoy playing as long as I could. And as it was coming to an end, I knew I wanted to coach. And I thought the whole time that, you know, I was going to go back to America and be a teacher and a high school coach. And opportunity just occurred, you know, playing for the great Lindsay Gaze, the national coach at the time, the guru of basketball in Australia. The SCBL, the second division, opened up, and they had teams like Bendigo, Gippsland, Ballarat, all entering teams at that time. And I got an opportunity. Lindsay came to me and said, "I can get you the job at Ballarat. You'd love it." And so, I went to America for a 2-week study course and then went to Ballarat, and that was the start of the career.
You've been highly successful as a coach. In your mind, Brian, and I'm sure you get asked this a lot, and a lot of people want to know, what in your mind makes a good coach, and why are you such a good coach?
Well, that course I told you about, it was so interesting. You know, the guy was a really motivational guy, and I was young, and I was going to a team that had never played top division in Ballarat. And at the finish, you know, we kind of befriended each other. He tapped me and he said, you know, when you go back to Australia, Brian, he goes, make sure you cover these bases. Number one, he said, outwork your opponents. And he said, if they get up at 4, you get up at 2. If they train 4 hours a day, you train 8 hours a day. You know, Ballarat, go out and recruit. You know, just outwork your opponent. Number two is winning's in the picking, the selection of people. And, we went through, and it was really interesting in the last dance about Jerry Krause. And the aspect, I don't think people, you know, take enough notice of that. And it's something I've had some Zoom meetings on with some of the football clubs here, just on selection of people, the important characteristics of selecting people. So surround yourself with good people. And then the third aspect, and something that really, really helped me was, you know, get around, you're in a country, find a sport that they're great, where they're great, and be around people that are better than you. Surround your people with people that are better than you. And I really, really took notice of the football here and was around people like Mick Malthouse and, you know, Terry Wallace Wheaton, Dave Wheaton, just, you know, went to football practices, watched how they built team culture, watched the conditioning and the teamship. And there was a lot of areas in Australian rules football that are like basketball. And those keys are something that have stayed with me and have been harder, obviously, as you've gotten older. But, you know, I've always had, at the end of the day, guys that good players and guys that played hard and guys that, you know, you always want guys that want you to win, that are going to play for you. And that X's and O's and all that, I may not have, you know, set the world on fire, but I've always had players that are committed, and I've had teams that, you know, want to win and want to win for me.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned select the right people, because I'm sure you've worked with players in the past that have been so talented, but for some reason they don't want to fit into your system. And how do you treat those players? What do? Do you move them on quickly? Do you give them an option of either buying in or buying out? Or do you sort of let it run its course?
Well, it's real interesting. I mean, I had, and I won't name the club, but, you know, one of the teams in the league had finished in the bottom. And they said, you know, we've taken the best player in the draft the last 4 or 5 years, and it's been a disaster. And, you know, we took no account of character. We took no account of work ethic. We took no account of, you know, what's more important, skill or quickness. You know, one of the things, you know, so we had a long talk on that. And I know for me, you know, let's give an example. My competition, when I first took the job in this, you know, was with the Spectre's Magic. I had to compete against Lindsay Gaze and Andrew Gaze. And we never, it was very interesting, rarely or never crossed on recruiting. Lindsay liked guys that were skilled and guys that, you know, could shoot. And he liked guys that were smart and could run a team. I was much more athleticism, explosive movement, and I'll teach skill. So, you know, when I say the winning's in the picking, you know, a lot of thought has to be put into this. And now I think in sport, you know, right up there, as it's changed, I've changed. My number one thing was that athleticism. Now I think, if you had five guys and they were all similar, decision-making is huge. On and off the court, can they play under pressure, and can they make decisions off the floor what's presented to you. Can they make the right decision? So, you know, again, I don't have all the answers, but, you know, what I'm learning is not everyone can play for me. I'm not for everybody, but I know what I want, and I target those guys.
We're speaking to six-time NBL championship-winning coach Brian Gorgian as our Friday legend. Brian, go back to the early 90s. The sport was absolutely booming in Australia. Fans couldn't get enough of the NBL. What are your favourite memories of that period and coaching at that time?
I think there was a lot of highlights, but you know that night, always your first, that 1992. We go from 91 playing that we called it the Glass House, where Collingwood is now, and you cross the street, and they, you know, Rod Laver was there. Basketball started taking momentum, and just a few years prior, we were in Albert Park. And that 1992 year, the Melbourne Tigers and the Magic, who had a fierce rivalry, moved in and shared Rod Laver. And that year, we went to the Grand Final Series and played a three-game absolute war. And Lindsey Gaze came up to me before the first game and grabbed my hand. And I was looking over and I'm thinking, what's he doing? You know, we never said a word before competing. You know, it's not like today where everybody hugs each other. It was like, you know, I don't want to see you. You don't want to see me. And he's walking down towards me. I think, what's going on here? And he looks at me and he grabs my hand and he said, Brian, I never thought this would happen in your lifetime, let alone mine. And I looked up and, you know, there were 17,000 people, and it happened over a three-game, all three games, and all three games were wars. And we won that thing at the end and in the last minutes, and Stern handed out the, you know, gave me my ring, and it was my first ring. And that, I think that year was the mecca of basketball in Australia.
How important, Brian, is the impact of the NBL to see more boys and girls growing up loving basketball in this country?
Always the state of the country is and what's amazed everybody in the time I was here when basketball was hot or cold. I don't think that's changed too much is in the fact that, you know, people were playing the game. And in Victoria, Lindsey Gaze has done an amazing job of getting stadiums built. I mean, you got 8-court stadiums, 10-court stadiums, 12-court stadiums. That's a real key, as opposed to when I was in New South Wales, where there's a few. Down here in Victoria, there's courts everywhere, and the kids are playing. And, you know, now you have the NBA is much more, you know, with the devices and the phone and, you know, NBA pass, you can watch and you can see. And now we've got role models like Baines, like Bogut, like Patty Mills that have made it. And I've always thought, you know, I've always scratched my head with, you know, here with the football, I'm looking at one, it's only played here, you know, and basketball. I mean, I've just been in China where there's 2 billion people that don't even know who Collingwood is or that sport. And they all are aware of basketball and what's going on with basketball. But Australia's done such a tremendous selling point on their sport. But I think basketball now, you just with what's going on in the world with you know, media and the devices that you can see around the world, that basketball now, people are becoming much more aware of the game and the popularity of it all over the world. And now we've got role models that are, you know, established in the NBA. We all hear about those contracts. So, you know, a lot of kids now not only are playing, but they're motivated to be great and get to the top level.
Brian, you just described, you know, 1992 and how big it was at that time when, you know, you had 17,000 in the stands for three straight games. What was it like, you know, after winning a championship at that time, with the players that you had before social media, obviously particularly Melbourne being a big AFL town, but your players became stars quickly at that time as well, didn't they? The likes of Bruce Bolden, Tony Ronaldson, etc.
Well, it was huge back, you know, that period of time. the game was live on Channel 10, and we had a TV package. And that was, I can't tell you how huge that was. Mm. And all the people, and when I come back to Melbourne, all those people, you know, recognized me. And when they talked, they were, man, I love those Magic days. I love those days. And the difference being that people can see it live on TV. And I don't want to shortchange the number. You know, a close second was going down to the Violet Crumbles, where Sydney was, you know, where was recognized as horrendous and always struggling. And I walked into guys like Matty Nielsen and Shane Hill that was just so desperate for success. And to walk into that group in the first year, win the whole thing, and then end up going a three-peat. But that first year with Shane and Matty and that group, Chris Williams and Kavasi and taking Sydney, you know, by the neck and making them, you know, Kings fan. That energy and that passion and being a new kid in New South Wales after all this time in Victoria and winning that last game in Perth like we did was in doing it with that group. Made a lot of friends. It's amazing. You know, you're in Melbourne for so long, and I was just in Sydney for 5-6 years, and some of the closest friends I have, you know, I'll say you have 10 friends, five of them from that group. So, you know, I really, and it's part of the reason going back there, I really loved my time in Sydney. I really did.
Now, no doubt you've quickly turned to recruitment as well. What's the one player you'd love to have come and join you at the Illawarra Hawks or the Hawks? When
apart
you take
from LeBron
the reins.
James.
I'm keeping that one a secret, but I will say this. We have four really good kids. And then the second aspect of recruiting now that's just startled me is the Sudanese and African community. I mean, that's just 11 years ago. That wasn't on the planet. And now, you know, I've seen so many talented African kids that excite me. You know, I'm looking, I'm going, man, I could, because again, a priority to me is quickness and length. And you know, you watch some of these kids play. It's an exciting time for Australian sport, not just basketball. This is a whole new group that is going to add to the games.
Brian, been so great to talk to you. Can't wait to see you courtside here in Australia again. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you.